Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gabaza, and for today, we are talking about technology, particularly around the banking sector. You'll notice that this has been, you know, quite a theme for us, just understanding how the banking fraternity has been using technology. And for today, we are joined by one of the country's, you know, foremost banking leaders, that is Jacques Celia, who is the CEO of FNB. They are one of the largest retail banks in South Africa. So we're just going to be hearing about them and, you know, what they've been seeing, because recently they actually launched quite an interesting feature that's reducing the need for people to, you know, queue. Right, because when it comes to compliance and just having your documents up to date, that's one of the things that people are queuing at their banking halls for the longest. So they've found a way to integrate some of these things through their mobile banking platform. So we're just going to be talking about all of these and other developments. Jacques, greetings to you and thank you for being with us.
Thanks for the opportunity.
So I think a good place for us to start before getting into the latest developments is just as FNB, right, from the outside, it has always tended to seem as if the bank is quite technology focused, even before the pandemic hit, because after the pandemic, everyone is talking about digital acceleration, digital adoption, and, you know, all of these gains, and everyone is now talking about technology investment. But before the pandemic, at least from the outside, it seemed as if you guys were quite focused on that. You know, could you describe for us maybe how the thinking was, you know, back then, and how it's possibly, you know, evolved over time since you took over, you know, a couple of years ago?
Awesome story for us, actually. You know, like, as you say, long before the pandemic, actually, we had been, you know, been seeing some nice momentum in our digital platforms and our, just, you know, our data leverage and how we build out innovative solutions for our customers. And ultimately, if you think sort of 2 decades ago, we were just a physical human intervention and interaction sort of organization. So which basically meant no different than today's retail worlds, where you had to go to a shop every time you wanted to buy something, right? And over time, we introduced, in parallel to our physical distribution, we introduced the digital channels, online banking and USSD and cell phone banking. Those things were the first that got a bit of momentum. And then post that, we more recently added the app, which obviously then took over, you know, sort of a world of its own. But for many ways, we sort of carried these two platforms, you know, sort of a world of physical and a world of digital, and they sort of ran in parallel with each other. And our aspirations was clearly always to migrate much more onto our digital platforms. And then, you know, as it sort of turns out, you know, all these disruptions help us with our migration. You know, the first disruptions came through competition, and the next disruption came through sort of the energy and electricity challenges. And then the last one is the pandemic that really helped us rush lots of our activity and our customer interactions onto platforms. So, you know, in many ways, you know, while COVID has been absolutely traumatic for so many out there, we've been very grateful in how it's expedited our strategy towards more digital enablement. But importantly, that has never been at the expense of allowing the human interaction. And often in my presentations, I for our internal teams, we reflect on, you know, there's a very good example of how a human assists a customer on a daily basis through what Uber has done, where the human driver is absolutely still needed to support so many of the customer interactions, but it just ultimately is facilitated through the Uber platform. And that's really what we built here, is that our journey of having our customers and our employees, you know, sort of interacting on our platforms, allow us to be able to do our jobs anywhere. And then that ultimately was a massive boost for us, because at the time when the pandemic hit and we couldn't rely on our physical environment so much, our employees could be very productive, you know, from anywhere supporting customers. So As you said up front, you know, we've been at this for a few years, and just delighted that that through this pandemic we could really put on display the power of our capabilities and impressed with how much we've been able to achieve through the last year.
Now, most recently, just given all of that development, it seems, you know, all of these different, you know, investments have really come together with, I guess, the latest offering that you guys have given just around the My Profile feature. I think, you know, it's one of those developments where one sits and wonders, how come this wasn't something that was already available, you know, before now?
We have a list of innovations we want to do on an annual basis. And often these, you know, when you think about innovators and how they bring value propositions to customers, they often think about a different loyalty scheme value prop or a different loan value prop or an investment value prop. There are often many features around the sort of bells and whistles of offerings that get a lot of attention, like a lot of in the technology resources, analytical resources applied to it. And then ultimately, they do get launched. We do lots of those on an annual basis, as you know, lots of new launches. But over the last 2 years, we decided to focus a lot on the customer experience around probably one of the biggest anxiety and friction points of customers' experiences with us. You know, so as opposed to bringing out another way of payment or making an investment or a loan, we decided to make big inroads into what we would like customers to experience when they have to work with us on maintaining their profile or setting up their profiles. In our journey towards platform, as we have articulated a few times in the past, you know, clearly we have massive aspirations that our customer base would be able to very easily register on our platforms and authenticate themselves with us. And then from our continuously expanding list of solutions and offerings, you could get those whenever you choose to. So my best example for that would be, you know, no different than how people register on Amazon. You know, it's very easy to register. It's quick to click. It's a few this, a few that, and then once you're in, you get access to the full suite of activities. Now, historically, an organization, financial services globally, have been constrained by lots of legislation around, you know, specific jurisdictions or specific, you know, sort of licenses, credit licenses, investment licenses, even in at different sort of shareholding groupings that created sort of brand frictions. And in our organization, as First Rand, we've had historical divisions between, you know, sort of different brands in our organization. And we had to navigate an incredible journey with our legal architectures over the last few years to create what we now refer to as our first ID relationship that basically gives you access to our environments without you having to have any of the specific products just yet. So you create a proper relationship with us. We give you we authenticate you onto our platforms, and then you can go in and out of products as you wish. You know, sometimes you go in and out of lending and investing in a month, or sometimes over a year, or sometimes over a lifespan. And this ability to navigate between products under this relationship architecture was probably one of the biggest innovations that our group has actually delivered over the years. It'll find its, you know, people and our customers are starting to experience that. You know, people get opportunities to register on our platforms, they get entered into this relationship agreement. And then ultimately, it's about reducing all of that complexity that are contained in all these different contracts. I mean, people are frustrated with 50 pages of this and 60 pages of that and 100 pages of this. And every time having to give your same information in again and this division or in that division. And all of that as a big theme for our innovation over the last 2 or 3 years has been unbelievably exciting journey for us. And then what we've launched now in the last month was your ability to maintain those, because we recognize that for many customers, very frustrated, they have to every now and again, not because necessarily we demand it, but regulation demands it, is that we're required to get updated information from customers. And that experience, you know, it's frustrating for both us and our customer, because what we typically have to do is try and phone you, try and get hold of you. You then frustrated because you're supposed to sort of take off time and go and stand in some queue or drop it off, or you might have dropped it off and you gave it to this person and said they will handle it, and then those persons don't handle it. And there's lots of friction, and we've innovated an incredible experience for customers on our platforms so that you can go in your personal capacity or your business capacity, update your own profile, manage your own mandates, change your own data. If your surname is spelled wrong, then spell it right. If your date of birth was captured wrong, you can capture it right. And it's just powerful to see how many customers are just flocking at this ability to manage their own profile. And this sets us up for probably the most important theme that's coming at the country in the next year or so is, this privacy regulations that's coming into play. And many people out there know that, the frustration of trying to manage what someone can and can't do with your information. Clearly, that's our anchor, right? Our business is foundation of trust is such a critical element for what we stand for. And earlier in the year, you saw how some of the social media messaging platforms were sort of challenged with what they can and can't do with customer information data. And so now the next step of putting our customers, in the driving seat of managing their permissions, what we are and what we should and shouldn't do with their data for them, how we can help them, and just putting that customer back in the driver's seat, right, of everything they do with us. So we're delighted with the launch. We're delighted with the initial customer feedbacks we've received. And it's something that we're going to build massive differentiation on in the market over the next few years.
There's actually a couple of questions that come up, from everything that you've said, because you've, quite comprehensively explained to us, I guess, the thinking from the bank's point of view around these issues. And I think, the three big ones is, firstly, when it comes to the issue of operating on digital channels, there is that cybersecurity risk. And, there've been a couple of incidences where banks have been involved in the last year. And because people are working from home, the cybersecurity experts are saying, this is becoming more of a risk. And then at the same time, I can imagine that putting all of this together, allowing people to update their documents online, etc. I'm just wondering what type of negotiating was happening in the background, right, to allow for all of that stuff to happen, because it is such a change in the way that people, have been doing things. And then, just lastly, when it comes to your technology investment, do you guys sort of think of it as, a lump sum, right? As Jacques, are you saying, okay, fine, FNB, we're going to spend, 50 billion on our technology, or is it sort of trickled down between the different departments and how they're thinking about their own innovation?
Okay, let me do the security one first. I mean, that's, again, one of the most exciting journeys we're on at the moment is... one of the vulnerabilities that we all face, whether it's for us from the bank perspective or our customers, is contained in how people's messaging interfaces get intercepted. Now, so whether it's a SIM swap, or whether it's an email compromise, or whether it's someone pretending that you are over a phone and profile takeovers, or even when they go to an ATM and take your PIN and so that profile takeover is probably the one of the most challenging ones for us to historically have managed. And where we obviously have vulnerabilities as society is contained when financial instructions happen through those old forms of communicating. The original forms, when you walked into the branch, it was quite easy for us to make sure that we really have identified you properly, and in the branch we can do biometrics and all this stuff. But all of these new ways of communicating, WhatsApping or whatever, there are so much risk contained in those methods of communicating, which is why we're so excited about the platform agenda, because behind the login, our customers and our ability to, first of all, identify the customer and figure out exactly what you are entitled to, not represent you in your, in your context, and then be able to have interactions with you on platform. So the secure chat and secure mail interfaces on our platform is gaining incredible traction. We're spending a lot of money to make sure that we've got all the data capabilities and all the sort of traditional experiences that people would expect, even from social media platforms that you go into, where all the bot responses, the automated responses, the appropriate queuing, getting you to the experts fast enough, trying to predict what your hassle is, having deep links in there that you can actually manage yourself quickly. Gone are the days that you have to hang on to a queue and to report a fraud on your account, and you'd be frustrated because the card's not blocked yet. I mean, for now, it's just log in through the secure chat, have a deep link, block the card, and tomorrow unblock it when you found your card again. So there's really good momentum in helping our customers onto more secure platforms and rails. Now, the other thing about the digital platforms and interfaces is also that there are many customers who still sort of feel much safer transacting off platforms. So you'll find even some of the elderly folk, or maybe some people, feel more vulnerable about using electronic channels. And strangely, most of our solutions that are protecting them are actually contained in these platforms. As an example, you know, there's much more risk in it for you as a business owner to withdraw cash and then drive home to go and pay some employee a salary in cash, as opposed to just using an e-wallet or making a, you know, electronic payment to it. So once we have customers' behavior in platform, we can manage their profile. We can warn them when someone is using their card in a jurisdiction that they're clearly not, which is, you know, we can do through our messaging layers. And that secure message that we interact with the customers, as I say, is gaining a lot of momentum. So we believe at the security level, these platforms are really set up for success. When it comes to, I guess, your question on investments, you must think of our architecture really like almost like a bicycle, where we have so many different departments and parts of a bicycle, for lack of a better descriptor. Sometimes the wheel department needs a bit of an overhaul. Sometimes the frame department needs an overhaul. Sometimes we need to put a new seat on it or a bell on it. And ultimately, our investments on our infrastructure is aimed at keeping our entire unit, you know, sort of up to the latest spec, making sure that we don't have one part of our system that's going to let us down. And so really, it's about investing in a very clever mind. Some of these things are quite expensive to do, and then obviously it takes a few years to get that done, and others are quite easy to accommodate in a cycle and quickly do an investment. And it's just powerful to see how all of these sort of things come together. If you have an organization that's got 10 different bicycles, then it becomes a bit more complex, and clearly aligning all these parts. You need a check account division, and you've got a homelands division, and you've got investments and insurances. These things all have different worlds that we somehow need to bring into a holistic architecture that ultimately, when the customers experience us, they must feel us as a nicely organized, well-oiled machine that just gets stuff done and removes all of the anxiety associated with managing money. You know, financial services is probably the most emotional topic anyone has, right? We all feel so much emotion every day. You know, do I have this? Can I afford that? You know, what is going to happen? Is my money safe? You know, am I getting the right returns? You know, all of these financial services experiences and all of our investments are aimed at ultimately setting customers up for success. How do we help our customers navigate this complexity? And how are we the GPS behind them that shows them the way and helps them navigate and find solutions? And, you know, if there's a bottleneck, we can turn left and we can go right, and there's a plan A, plan B, and, you know, just being there for customers and being responsive to their challenges at any given time. This sort of anxiety differentiation, you know, when you think about everyone around the world, lots of banks, lots of insurance companies, who makes people's lives a bit easier, you know? So, you know, think about our insurance propositions we launched, for example. You know, I don't know if you know it, but in our insurance company, you don't have to claim. We have an updated record from Home Affairs every day about who passed away. And then we know who the beneficiary is, and we can pay the funeral policy, you know, out to the beneficiary without waiting for someone to claim for it. Now, those are massive innovations that technology enables that traditionally we wouldn't have been able to do. So grateful for all the sort of stuff coming together and the support we got.
I think the other piece, because there's a lot of integration, I mentioned it just now, but I would be quite interested to understand how you guys have been able to bring, you know, all of these different stakeholders together, especially given all the regulation that surrounds banks, etc. I can imagine that from, you know, even a regulation point of view, trying to trust the digital channels and, you know, allowing people to do certain things online. I'm sure there's a lot of convincing that you guys have had to do on your part, you know, just in terms of that, some of those negotiations. Could you maybe talk to us about what that process has actually been like, just to make sure that you can deliver this type of convenience? There must have been some mindsets that had to be changed.
Actually, in a South African context, we are unbelievably blessed that our regulator is so forward-looking and forward-thinking. You know, they have over the years absolutely supported us on everything. You know, I remember, you know, when we started eBucks 20 years ago, we were challenged a little bit with, you know, can we launch a digital currency? Today, obviously, right around the world, digital currencies are big topics, right? Our regulator has been with us all along our journey when we did online foreign exchange, when no one thought that was possible. So I think we as an industry are very blessed to have a regulator that supports us. And in fact, many of the government processes are more broader than just our regulators allow us to. I mean, if you think about Home Affairs, that has given us the ability to be able to integrate into their environments and get daily updates and get real-time feeds of customer authentication against the Home Affairs database. It's just powerful when let's call it government support is there and government enablement is there for industry to have innovative responses. And so too with SIPC, that we through our interaction with Department of Trade, that we are able to get real-time customers when they open a bank account. You can register your business. You can get sort of all of the name registrations and stuff done. So that ultimately allows the utility components of industry to operate. And there's so much more opportunity in that stuff. As an example, we could do license renewals. We could do rates and taxes integrations. We could help people to transfer properties faster. We could have backups of deeds more organized across the country. So there's so many opportunities for industry and government to work together. And fortunately, as I say, our regulators are supporting us. In fact, regulators probably pushing us a lot because lots of the demand that we're supposed to deliver, you can only really deliver if you have digital enablement and data enablement that can cater for that. If you think about, you know, combating crime and fraud as an example, I mean, it's almost impossible to do that with manual processes, and unless you aren't able to rely on massive digital and data capabilities, it would be probably impossible to deliver to all the demand that the regulators need us from a crime fighting perspective. So I think as an industry we're very blessed to have had sort of a regulator that supports us. And I think even if you think about the momentum that's into thing like inclusion of getting social grants enabled through bank accounts, or getting, you know, innovative approaches to getting credit origination done through the NCRs. These are unbelievable innovations that are coming out of the banking sector as a whole, with our regulators are very supportive.
Sort of sticking onto the industry theme, I wanted to, maybe you could talk to us, because it seems that right now banking in South Africa seems to be sitting on a spectrum, you know, of some sort. You've got, you know, the traditional banks such as yours, FNB, part of First Rand Group. You guys have been around for, you know, quite a long time, as well as, I guess, the other big four banks. And then you've got new entrants that are fully digital. So I guess it's like an analog to digital sort of spectrum. How do you see, I guess, the evolution of the future? Because is it a fully digital world, or is it sort of coming back to banking halls? Like, how are you seeing it?
Okay, so it's a very good question. Banking, as you say, we've been around for 183rd year now. And so competition come and go, that we've also seen. But what we found over years is that if you watch the trends and the sort of technology enablements, and you sort of make sure that you stay with the trends of the time, that you can guarantee yourselves another 182 years of existence, right? That's what it's really ultimately about. We love competition. We love new entrants because they bring new flavors. We watch what they do. We try and respond to some of the competitors, and that keeps us on our toes. But when you think about a business like ours, we also recognize that this is not the first time that there are some meaningful change happening to an industry. A few years ago, we all used to use printers as an example, and today there are very few printers in our environments. A few years ago, we all used to use fax machines, and before, you know, fortunately, yesterday, at some stage, someone bought us a calculator. Otherwise, we would still be doing, you know, sort of paper-based journals. And so what we do is we respond to the opportunities of the time and the tool sets of the time. And that's the configuration that's going on globally at the moment. You could find some monoline plays or fintech plays come out with some variations of a theme. It's brilliant. Sometimes we respond to them because we think it's important, or sometimes we don't think that's going to be the sustainable differentiation. So all of these elements are coming at us, and such a so cool to be part of an industry where there's such vibrancy and the regulatory landscape allows people to play with things and do things differently, and somehow that excitement brings up a lot of innovation, and that is ultimately good for society. You know, we are so proud as an industry that across the world, when you see, you know, countries battling with a pandemic now, at least our country is not battling with the banking sector. You know, we're battling with some other parts of our economy, but the banking sector is very strong and healthy, and that's very good for a society to be able to deal with challenges. So exciting times.
And then as we round up the discussion, I guess bringing all of it together, like you said, the digital enablement, just making the lives of the consumers easier, responding to new entrants, the digital players, fintechs, all of that. I'm going to ask a question which I asked your colleagues when they were here on the platform. I think back in the day, it was called Gold and Easy. So it was Robert and Pilani. And we asked them, are banking halls dead? Right? Because we keep hearing about, no, people aren't doing the retail thing anymore. Banks and retailers are going to reduce their retail space and everything is becoming automated. So yes, as we round up, how are you guys thinking about physical or that banking space? Because you did mention earlier on that there are people, money is a sensitive subject, and there are still people who want to have that personal interaction when it comes to their money.
Yeah, that's a very important question. And as I said earlier, our purpose for our platform is actually set up for our employee engagement. Now, employees. Engagement traditionally was only enabled through a branch. I mean, so the only way for you to get to one of our employees is that you had to go to a branch. That's how you sort of got help. Slowly over time, alternative models were introduced. As an example, a banker could come and see you at your office, or you could meet a banker at a coffee shop, or you could engage with our contact centers. And so over time, alternative distribution forms were introduced to our customers. The powerful adjustment that's in play at the moment is that what happened with those worlds is each of those experiences were different. So you would walk to a branch, you'd get a different experience than when you had to a banker, you'd get a different experience if you called a contact center, and even some branches had different experiences to others, because all of the different environments, somehow for each of the products, had its own complexity in processes and its own complexity in platforms and stuff. And what we've done over the last few years is conform all of those into a single platform experience, so customers can get our similar experience, whether they help themselves unassisted sitting on their couches at home, or when they get assisted in our environments. Now, what's great about our strategy at the moment is that we are committed to that point of presence, being very close to people in communities. You know, we see ourselves not as the sort of one big old store somewhere in a city. In fact, we see ourselves as little convenience stores right around the corner, close to where you are, in the communities in which you run, and for two purposes. Sometimes something breaks and you want to run and get some urgent help, that we must be close to you when you need that human interaction for that frustration, whatever that is that hits you. And the other one is for we believe for a very long time, financial services will need a lot of human interaction and advice, and conversations, and support. And those typically could either be facilitated in a coffee shop or at your premises, or at our facilities. And we think that that trust that people have as they walk in there, and it feels organized, and we're well set up, and we're clean and smart, our brand, our image in the local community, our commitment to local communities are important. You know, when you put up a shop in town, then you show you're committed. You've got an environment, you've got, and so I think in the fullness of time, we will have local presence in communities. But the days of standing in long queues and around tellers and, you know, being frustrated with getting a statement printed and stuff like that, I mean, those are not things that we feel that our environments will be catering for. It's much more advice, selling, you know, if you're starting a business, how do I do that? If you're getting divorced, how do I do that? If I'm, you know, trying to plan for my retirement, those are little moments where it's not traditionally captured in just that you can help yourself and you have all the facts and you do your research, but you want to come and sit and talk to the experts. So what we hope to do in the end and be recognized for is that we have local expertise, local commitment in the communities that we serve. And that's that would really ultimately be a big combination with our platform agenda, a successful outcome.
So that's been it. We're with Jacques Celia, who is the CEO of FNB, and he was just giving us some insight into how they're thinking about technology, their use of technology, how all of that has been accelerated due to the pandemic, because he says they've been on their digital journey for a number of years, even before the pandemic came into play. And what's happened now has allowed them to actually accelerate their journey over the last year, more than anything else, reducing the friction that customers have to feel. And I like the fact that, you know, towards the end, he's articulating a sort of a hybrid model between the technology and the physical presence of a bank like FNB, but also changing what the experience of that physical interaction ends up being, more towards advice as opposed to going to, printing or, you know, just leaving documents and stuff like that, sort of changing that and also shifting the mindset of people when they do go and interact with a bank like FNB, in the physical space, how they change that. You do the low level tasks online, and then if you need something that's higher order, you sort of go and you seek that advice from the bank. So Jacques, thank you so much for being with us.
Appreciate the opportunity.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Quite a fascinating discussion with Jacques. I think one of the most interesting things, you know, when you look at the FNB story is how they did start their, you know, their digital transformation journey, you know, sometime back, a lot of push around the mobile app and all of the different features, because when you look at the number of features that are on that FNB app, it's, you know, it's quite a lot. And I guess that speaks to all the different offerings that can be had in a bank. And when you look at competing banking platforms, you also sort of see similar trends where there's just so much going on these digital channels that, you know, one has to really wonder what's actually going on inside the banks themselves. So to sort of hear someone like Jacques articulating a new hybrid model, but more importantly, shifting the shift towards a different way of using those banking halls or using that physical presence, it really does speak to where the future is likely going, because money is a sensitive topic. It is a sensitive subject. And for a lot of people, they still want to be able to have that face-to-face interaction, especially for more sort of complex financial issues. You heard him talking about issues of divorce, issues of, financial planning, issues of retirement saving, that type of thing. And in some of those cases, you do want to be able to have that face-to-face interaction. So it does change what the purpose of that face-to-face interaction is, sort of taking some of the higher order interactions that have always existed, but putting them a little bit more in the fore, and then at the same time taking some of the quote-unquote lower level stuff you know, offloading that onto your banking platform so that you can concentrate your physical presence toward, you know, the planning, the advice, that type of thing. So it's an interesting one, and it will be good to see over time whether this actually ends up being the case and whether this is where the industry goes, and whether, I think more importantly, whether consumers will be receptive, because we can talk about all the plans that an industry or a particular bank has, but at the end of the day, what dictates where they end up going will ultimately be the reception that they receive from their clients and their customers, and the type of experience that they have, and how much they're actually willing to change their own mindsets when it comes to these issues. So looking forward to seeing how things evolve over time. The technology revolution, you know, has been here, accelerated, and, you know, just good to see how all of these evolutions are happening. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So, for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.